what you actually want to do is bring the offline online. So with all those leaders, how they exist offline, you just want to bring that online, and you can shape it a little and you can be selective around bringing elements of the offline to the online, but you're not trying to create something that doesn't exist.
You're listening to the Content 10X podcast, where it's all about content repurposing. I'm Amy Woods, and I'm here to help you maximize your content and find smart ways to get your message in front of more of the right people, whilst also saving time. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Content 10X podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and this week is a guest episode, and it's all about companies investing in their leaders' personal brands on LinkedIn. Now, can B2B companies turn their leaders into one of their most powerful marketing and employer branding assets? Personal brand expert Ash Jones says yes. Ash joins me for the second time on the Content 10X podcast. This time, we talk all about the growing trend of leadership visibility and personal branding for leaders within organisations on LinkedIn. Ash is the founder of Great Influence and now Great Leaders as well. He explains how Great Leaders came about in this discussion. Ash has worked with so many leading founders, CEOs and influencers. Probably most well known are Stephen Bartlett and Gary Neville. This conversation dives into why helping leaders build a personal brand isn't a risk, but instead it's a strategic advantage. And we talk about what it really takes to make it work inside complex businesses. So listen on to find out why big organisations like Booking.com and Sky are investing in leadership voices. Find out about the measurable business impact of activating leaders on LinkedIn. We talk about how to balance company messaging with authentic personal expression, how to help leaders find confidence, consistency, and real influence online, and so much more. This is a fantastic conversation. I can't wait to share it with you. So let's jump in. Ash, welcome to the Content 10X podcast. Welcome back to the Content 10X podcast.
I know, an honor to return.
A fun fact, actually, I was looking at seeing how long it's been. It's almost been 4 years, can you believe, to the day. It was September 2021.
Wild.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's actually, it's Claudia in our team. It's her fifth anniversary tomorrow.
And, oh, wow.
She was the first person I employed. And I've been getting people that she's worked with down the years to send video messages in. And everyone's just like, I can't believe it's been 5 years. Like, where does the time go?
Yeah, I mean, now you say that, I remember you announcing hiring your first person and things like that.
Yeah.
So amazing. Yeah, well, time flies. Well, last time you were on, we had a fantastic conversation, obviously talking about Great Influence, which you're known as a force behind the personal branding for many CEOs, founders, influencers. In this conversation today, I would love to chat to you about Great Leaders. So I know that you have Great Leaders now, as well as Great Influence. Turn your leadership team into your competitive advantage. So working with global companies, helping them to activate their leadership team. So firstly, how did this come about? How did Great Leaders come about?
It, as most things do, it was a happy accident that wasn't planned. Basically, the domino chain that happened was, we were working at Great Influence. One of our clients was a VP at a big, like, European fashion retailer. And it was the first time that we'd worked with someone who wasn't the founder.
Right.
She was a VP at a really, really large European retail business. And even that was a bit of a conversation, like, it's not a founder or a CEO. Do we stick to that, or do we work with this person and see how it goes? And we just loved the person. We thought there was really something in her, and she was a great personality. We could see how it would work. And we did that. And then she got hired to work at Booking.com.
Right.
And she took us with her, essentially, into Booking.com. We continued to work on her profile. And there was a bit of a strategy around her profile. She was working in the European retail business with a PR and comms agency on her.
Right.
And we were part of that. And she took us over to booking.com. And then what happened was that Booking had a meeting with LinkedIn, and LinkedIn highlighted her as the most influential person within the company on LinkedIn.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, there was a bit of like, okay, how's that happened? So we got introduced to a team within Booking and explored a pilot of like, right, okay, you've done this for one of our team, but can you do it for somebody who is less of an obvious candidate for this kind of thing? And again, that was a conversation of like, should we do this? Because it's not our usual bread and butter. And again, like we thought, let's just try it, give it a go. We did a 3-month pilot with Booking with one person that turned into 3 people, that turned into 5, that turned into 10. And it's been 2 years that we've been working with Booking now. And we sat on it for maybe a good year of just doing that. And I think it was the right thing to do, is just like, okay, explore what happens here, see how it goes, see what the work delivers, see the sentiment of it internally and all that kind of thing. And then after a year, it was kind of like, okay, is there something in this where it's like we're doing something for a leadership team, and there's a bit of a model forming to it now after a year. And yeah, do we think that that's valuable? And at the same time, my finger on the pulse of the personal brand market, so to speak, I've been in it for a decade now, is that what I've seen happen is when I started doing it with Steve Bartlett in 2015-16, we were looking at the US of Gary Vaynerchuk and going, we could do that here. And I think Steve was like what definitely one of the first handful of entrepreneurs who looked at what Gary Vee was doing in the US and thought, right, okay, I can do that here, making content and posting on social media. It sounds very basic and obvious now, but there just was literally a handful of people doing it then, and Steve was one of them. And then you saw he started to build his, and then around 2018-19, I reckon the dominoes started to fall amongst more people like Steve, agency owners, freelancers, small startup owners and founders and things like that. And they started getting into personal branding. And then you started to see scale-ups start to think about it, where like in the early days, I worked with founders at companies like Huel and Grenade, who were doing like, you know, 50 to 100 million as a scale-up. And what's happened in the last year and 18 months that kind of solidified my thinking around turning the Booking project into its own thing was that I started to see global companies start to come into it. And it was almost like you went personal branding, entered at the bottom of the chain and worked its way up right to the top. And you look at companies like Sky with their CEO, Dana Strong, Channel 4 with Alex Mahon, who's, I think she stepped away from Channel 4 now, but she was doing it. Marks and Spencer's CEO, Stuart Makin. There was a number of like UK examples. So, and the US was already with, like, if you look at HubSpot, they've activated like so many leaders within their team. So that's usually like an indicator. You can predict what's going to happen now. Like, I know when I started, I was having to try convince the agency owners, the startup founders and the scale-up founders that personal brand was a good idea. And then 3 years later, they're all doing it. And the same thing was happening in the last 12 months of like, the global companies are now starting to do it, but I know where this is going in the next 2, 3, 4 years because I've seen it play out before in a further down the chain. So yeah, that was my thesis, so to speak. It's like, okay, we've got a great case study in Booking. We've got a model of how to do it. And the market, I feel, is cycling in the same way as I've seen before. And yeah, that was the basis for it. And my intuition, I've had a couple in the last running Great Influence, I've had 2 feelings of what is developing. And one of them is that basically this idea around entrepreneurship was starting to become a pillar within popular culture in the same way as like football and lifting weights and wellness and music and fashion and all those things are like the fabric of popular culture, I felt that entrepreneurship was starting to become something like that. Obviously, with Steve becoming so high profile and all these other entrepreneurs and business and make your own money and all that kind of thing bleeding into the zeitgeist of popular culture, I felt that was going to be a thing. And what was going to happen was you'd have entrepreneurs who almost started to become like celebrity talent. And I've seen it firsthand with Steve. And I thought that's going to start to happen more. So really, I looked at talent management for celebrities and thought there's going to be a need for that for entrepreneurs who are starting to become influencers, and they're going to start doing books and they're going to just start doing tours and all this kind of thing. And we went in that direction, and it was too early, and it wasn't really something that we knew inside out and could learn easily. It was a completely different discipline. So we did that maybe like 3 years ago. And I still think now it's too early if someone was to do it. I think it's happening and it's going to be a thing, but I think it's going to take a couple of years still. And then the other one has been this, past what we do originally. And in the last month, I've had conversations with Deloitte, EY, Expedia, Santander. Like, there's a whole bunch of global companies who are now looking at like, right, okay, how do we formalize and strategize this, because they're doing it internally already, but it's a bit of an ad hoc approach. I feel like the thesis that I had was correct in a way, and I'm seeing the market respond to it in the conversations that we're having. So that's kind of the foundation of where it all came from.
When you get a company that invests then in helping their leadership become top voices on LinkedIn, it completely makes sense talking about like entrepreneurs and business owners and people like that. But when it's the company investing in their leadership team and bringing in outside expertise to help their leadership team, why do they do that? Some companies will be worrying that, does this really help us? Because if we're putting our leadership team on a pedestal and becoming top voices on LinkedIn, that is massively beneficial to them. And it can be beneficial to us because they work for us. But ultimately, how do we measure the business impact? Like, why would we invest in this? So what kind of conversations do you have there about the ultimate business impact and the why?
Yeah, it's everything is about, because you're actually not pitching or speaking to the leaders. You're speaking to a team within the company, whether it's PR and comms, whether it's employer brand, whether it's this or it's that. You're not actually dealing with the leaders that you're working with in terms of why they do it. Whereas on the great influence side, we're pitching to the founder, and it's the founder that's going to be doing the work. So it's a bit straight away, the team that you're speaking to within the company, the actual personal gain for it from the leader is very low on there. Like, it's not non-existent, but it's part of it. But it's not the priority of why they're having the conversation. So straight away, you've got a different conversation that you're having. And the mechanics are exactly the same in terms of like your strategizing, building a roadmap, creating content, executing, managing, reporting on the whole process. But where it's pointed and why it's pointed that way and what it's saying and who it's saying it to and the outcome that you're trying to look for is just pointing in a different direction than it would if a founder is doing it. For a founder, the business side of thing is one of several cogs that they're trying to make turn. Whereas for a company looking to invest in this kind of thing, the business cogs are greater than the personal cogs. Whereas with a founder, they're probably like evenly matched out. And there's a few reasons. I think a big one is both bringing talent into the business and also helping retain talent within the business, where if you look at certain industries right now, have issues around like leadership, the perception of leadership, and do they treat people well and what it's like to work there and all this kind of thing. There's so much going into companies investing in employer brand and how do they attract talent and how do they retain talent. And I think that you're now in a situation where people want to know who they're working for. not just the brand. They want to know the people that they're working with. And it can be a competitive advantage for your leadership to be out there in the market, almost like signposting why talent should work at your company and also why the talent that are already there should stay at the company. So I think that's a massive one of they become, I think the thing behind it is like they could become comms and marketing and brand channels for the business in a way. And that can be directed across multiple areas of the business, from employer brand, as I said there, about talent and retaining it and attracting it, to key comms narratives within the business. So say, for example, if a global company is they're going through a restructuring period, your leadership in that moment are actually probably more important than what the brand says. Because if you're restructuring, which so many global companies are, and you know, it becomes kind of like a norm within global companies to do that at times, the transition period of those restructure periods is really, really critical. And in those moments, am I, who's one of maybe thousands of employees in a restructuring process, do I want to hear from the brand in that moment? No. I want to hear from a person. So you can imagine like a company has both situational issues and challenges and opportunities, and the messaging and narratives around that can be distributed through the leadership. And also they can have strategic business growth ones that are also done in the same way. And then there's other areas in terms of like PR and comms and marketing, and you can essentially, there's so much within a business that you could go, right, a number of people having a presence in the market and speaking about this around this thing can really help support us in some kind of way, shape or form. And the benefit is that when you're dealing with companies of that size, if you can move the needle 0.1%, it becomes massive. Whereas if on the great influence side, when we work with founders of scale-ups, for example, 0.1% isn't that much. They kind of need it to be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%, maybe even 10, 20% moving the needle. Whereas in a business of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 employees, just moving the needle 0.1% can make a massive impact. And we saw that with Booking, where I think the difficult thing is, how do you always measure personal brand in some way, shape or form? And it's been such a challenge for our industry for the past 5 years, I think. And with Booking, we were really fortunate that they identified a way to measure it. And they told us what that was and what they were going to measure it on. And they told us 2 years later what the outcome was. And they had the hard data to prove it. And we managed to swing the percentage positively of this metric in the right direction over 2 years. They basically had a number of metrics that they were looking to positively improve in terms of the percentage. And the one that we were working on was the highest growth percentage from where it was at before. And again, it's less than 1%. But when you're in a company of that size, 0.1% is massive. So it became, we managed to get that. And I think you need that as well when you're dealing with companies of that size. They're not just looking for like good vibes, they're looking for measurable outcomes. So it's been a really interesting project to work on. And yeah, for global companies, I see massively how it makes sense, because it's another channel to try to achieve these business goals. Which I think founders that have been doing personal brand in the past 5 years or so, they have that on their mind. Like they're obviously trying to grow their businesses and make it work, but they're much more comfortable with understanding that personal brand is a brand awareness play that domino effects into the business impact that they're looking for. They're much more comfortable with it not being directly measurable, whereas global companies want to see direct measurement.
Hey, just a little break from this week's episode to let you know about becoming a Content 10X Insider. If you want more content repurposing tips and advice, then why not join hundreds of business owners, marketers, and content creators who get them delivered straight to their inbox once a week by subscribing to the Content 10X newsletter, as well as tips and advice. You get industry updates, inspiring stories, exclusive content, offers, and more. You can subscribe at content10x.com/newsletter, and there's a link in the show notes too. Okay, back to this week's episode.
What I'd love to know is that when you're working with, say, a selection of leaders within a company, and you're helping to develop a LinkedIn persona and LinkedIn content for all the reasons that we were just talking about, to what extent do you sit down with them and discuss personal pillars in order to put them more forward as an individual thought leader versus agree with the leadership, the sponsor of the program, as to what the voices will, I kind of construct the persona of those people, if you know what I mean. So like, how do you get that balance? And combined with, do you therefore get any resistance where they might be saying, I'd really like LinkedIn to focus me on this, and then the company are like, no, that's not really aligned with us, can you focus on this? So how does that work?
Yeah, I think there's just an acknowledgement that it's not about either party, and it's about what's the right thing to do. And the right thing, like if the business wants to achieve, like take, say a business wants to focus on attracting talent into their business, and they use their leadership team as part of the mechanics to be able to do that within the business, it makes sense to show a human personal side to the leader, because that's part of how you attract talent, is like people buy into people. And if you're just turning the leadership team into glorified comms channels, it's not real. It's not reflective. It's not authentic. And it's really understanding that what you actually want to do is bring the offline online. So with all those leaders, how they exist offline, you just want to bring that online, and you can shape it a little, and you can be selective around bringing elements of the offline to the online, but you're not trying to create something that doesn't exist. And it's educating the company on the importance of making sure that it's a bit of a overly complex word, but the ecosystem of the individual, the different aspects of a person are all reflected. So that it gives a rounded image of the person, which plays an important role. You can imagine if you're just like, work here, we're great, like we're the best company in the world, that becomes, at a point, it doesn't feel real anymore. It feels like a tactic. It's about trying to get the company on board with the thinking behind that. And for me, like the biggest challenge that you've got is like, well, why should we do this if they're just going to get headhunted? And for me, it's such a prehistoric way of looking at it, where if you hire a salesperson into your company, often you would try to hire somebody who's got a bit of a black book, and they're coming in and they straight away can go and speak to connections in the network, and you're already getting an ROI on making that hire. We have no problem with that. And we know that when other companies hire salespeople and new business and development people from us, the expectation is that you're also kind of getting their network and the relationships that they've got, and they're bringing that over. You hear it so much within agencies of like, we hired this person and they brought over this client and all that kind of thing. It's expected. But when the same conversation is had around personal brand, it's like, well, we don't want to invest in them because they'll get headhunted by somebody else. It's like, well, why are you investing in your sales and new business? You're letting your new business people have access to your entire network, and they can just go elsewhere and take that with them. So yeah, for me, it's like a company is looking at it in the wrong way. They're thinking risk averse rather than opportunity potential of like, whilst this person is here, whether that's for a year or for 10, let's try to maximize what we get out of them and what they get out of us. And if the balance of those two things is correct, where the leader is getting what they want out of the company and the company is getting what they want out of the leader, I don't think it's a bad thing. It can be, both sides can win. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a old way of looking at it. It's not very progressive.
And I can imagine another objection, or I guess kind of concern, that you must get this time from the individuals themselves that you're working with would be, I don't have the time, and what am I going to talk about? Do people have blocks where it can be, you know, a struggle to get them to open up in order to help you with that? And also the time side of things. Is that something that you just have to try and work around and obviously just use your expertise in order to get what you can from people in a limited amount of time?
Yeah. Time is just, it's been the thing that we've had to work around for 7 years. It's like every entrepreneur is infinitely busy.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, it's, we're used to that by now, and the time's not an issue. And it's more, I'd say the only barrier really is like, they believe sometimes that what they say isn't, like, they've not got the confidence to be able to do it really. And you're actually having to work on that. It's always just a confidence barrier, and you work with them, you help support them. You have interesting conversations with them where you get them saying insightful things. And once you get them saying insightful things and you can kind of highlight that back to them, they're able to have some kind of, you've really just got to try to build their confidence a little, because often you're working with senior leadership. They don't tend to be young people. They're people who are like later in their careers. And the issue there is that they've never really done social media before. And they are the generation that maybe, like, I'm 30, I'm about to be 38, and I was the first of my friends to have an iPhone. And my generation, my friends, we're almost like in the middle of social media and not social media. And if you're over 40, you might just have been the last crowd of not social media native, where it's like it came into your life and you're like, what is this? I have to understand it, learn it now. So the challenge is that they're not social media native, and to ask them to do something 10, 15, 20 years into their careers that they've not done before, when they perceive it to be maybe vulnerable or a threat or anything like that, is a very difficult challenge to overcome. Whereas the difference is, like, we've got someone in our company called Kira, and she's in her early 20s. She straight away was like, I'm posting on LinkedIn about working at Great Influence. Like, she's comfortable picking up the phone and filming herself. Like, she's so social media native, because young people are social media native. And if Kira was the VP of a global company, you'd have no challenge getting her to do it. She'd be like, amazing, fantastic, you've got this support for me. Whereas, yeah, that's the other challenge you have, is a bit of a generational one, where you're having to coach them a bit more and give them the confidence to be able to show up online and all that kind of thing.
And do you coach them with regards to responding, you know, to comments and things like that, and handling that whole side of things as well? Because that can be a tricky one, especially when people like to antagonize and troll and things like that as well, positive comments. Do you support with the other side of the posting for content?
Yeah, I think the comment side of things and how will people respond is, rightly so, a perceived threat, where the company are like, what happens if this? Or the leader is like, what happens if this? And the reality in my experience is that it actually happens 0.001% of the time.
Really?
Yeah, just like, especially if you're playing, like, the majority of these companies are just focusing on LinkedIn right now. And the good thing about LinkedIn is that it's like, nobody wants to get cancelled on there. So it's not like Twitter, where you can hide behind an anonymous profile and give people, you know, grief. Your company and who you work for is attached to your profile, which limits people from getting too, I don't know, negative or aggressive or anything like this. And it's only really an issue for, like, really, really high profile people or really high profile companies that are going through some kind of turbulence. And yeah, I think when that's the case, what actually usually happens is the PR and comms within the company are well aware of anything that might be said in that moment in time. And they're usually quite well prepared for what should be our party line response to these kind of things. So you're actually, yes, we can support and advise, but 9 times out of 10, I'd imagine PR and comms are well aware of if something happens, what that might be and what how to kind of approach it. Because it's very rarely, if ever there's going to be a negative comment, it's very rarely about what the leader has said and more about where the leader works, if that makes sense. So yeah, it tends to be boxed off by PR and comms a lot of the time.
And do you work as well as PR and comms, like when it comes to employee advocacy as well? So on the other side, all the employees that work within the companies getting behind, you know, the these leaders when they're posting and things that they could be saying, encouragement, that kind of thing. So like the positive side and linking with employee advocacy. Is that something else that you advise on or coach on or help with in terms of that, like boosting the profile, so what, with that program?
Not currently, but it's an opportunity for sure. You can see how they link together. And I know of an agency that work on the employer brand side of things, and they do something similar to what we do with great leaders, but they do it within employee advocacy. And it's very much like they identify a cohort of employees and bring them together and train them, give them support, encouragement, coaching, mentoring, resources. And yeah, the idea is that a company is investing in a group of employees who want to do this kind of thing, and together they're like creating a bit of a program and support for it to happen. So yeah, it's very much like a complementary to what we do with the leaders, but we don't do the employee side yet. Maybe one day.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of what you just said, actually, like the want and the desire, for the people that you were just talking about, so the non-social media natives, like the older people and stuff, and you're convincing them and working with them on something that's not necessarily familiar to them and certainly not second nature, what do they see, or what do they gain as their personal reward of participating in the process of spending time with you guys and then getting the LinkedIn posts and getting a following, etc.? Do you feel that they end up feeling the personal reward of all of it?
Yeah, definitely. I think the reason why they're in the roles that they are is because they lead well and they articulate well and they speak well to people. Yes, they're like good on the execution side, but a lot of the time the reason why senior leaders are in those roles is because they can lead people forward and they can articulate well and they can hold the floor, and they naturally get a bit of a kick out of that, where it's like when they're speaking in front of people, when they're leading meetings, when they're doing everything that they're doing in terms of leading people through communication, It gives them like reward out of doing that, and they enjoy that side of things. And this is just more of that. It's just doing it online, and they get the, again, they're putting their opinion out there, they're communicating, they're speaking, and people are engaging with that and they're getting feedback on it. And yeah, it's the same, again, it's like the same kind of thing. Yeah, they're personally getting that out of it. And I think a lot of them will think that they have something to say, and they're at a point in their careers where they've gained so much experience, knowledge, insight, and opinion, and they're keen to test whether they're actually interesting or not. And this gives them the opportunity to, like, they all believe that they have got interesting things to say, undoubtedly. They just, the confidence might not be there to put it out, but if you ask them underneath the surface of that, they definitely believe that they've got something worthwhile to say. So I think it's almost like these people are naturally like social climbers, so to speak. They're always looking, how can I get ahead in my career? How can I go further up the ladder? And they see this as a way that enables them to do that and challenges them, and they can learn something in some way and, yeah, helps them sharpen the sword, so to speak.
Yeah, it completely makes sense. And I'm sure the individuals that are chosen to work with you are chosen for a reason, aren't they? And so it completely makes sense, everything that you just said. So final question, and no, this is not the easiest one, but so cracking LinkedIn can be really hard. You know, there's millions of people sharing on LinkedIn, and some people, you know, only ever get a couple of likes and don't get many following and things like that. And you are fantastic at it, you and your team, and you certainly use your expertise, and you've cracked the code, I think, in terms of how, you know, how good you are and the results that you get for the people that you work with and yourselves. What would you say is sort of the biggest mistake that you see people who are just perpetually just not managing to crack this LinkedIn code, that maybe if they just worked on that one thing, they might start to see more traction with what they're doing on LinkedIn?
I take a pause because it's a bit of a twofold answer, in that one is, I think the answer is that they're not producing content and doing the whole personal brand thing aligned enough with the outcome that they're trying to get from it.
Okay.
And they're a bit too thinly spread in terms of what they're doing and how much that links back to the outcomes that they would like to achieve from it. So I think if they're able to tie those two things together a bit clearer, that would be the first thing. But then the second part is like the importance of social influence in creating opportunities. And this is a bit of a caveated answer. I don't think people put enough into growing a following on the platform and growing their numbers on the platform. And if they do, it's usually in pretty low hanging fruit, hacky ways that aren't very healthy and long-term fruitful. So yeah, like people overlook the importance of having social influence, and they're happy just kind of like letting each month pass without going, how do I ramp up these numbers and grow this platform? And yeah, it's been highlighted to me personally in a number of ways over the past few months, the importance of having social influence to be able to open doors. And yeah, I think people, if they can get clear on what they want and tie that up to what they're producing, that's one way. And the other way is to really focus on like, how can I grow this channel to a point where it opens doors? Like, there's people that right now are getting opportunities that their experience and authority and current standing within business shouldn't warrant those opportunities, but because they've got social influence, they're getting them over other people. And yeah, it becomes more evident to me over time the importance of having social influence. So it's like, go after those two things, and also pick your battle. Like, do you want to play the social influence game? Do you want to play the new business game? Are you trying to play the like PR game? Like, which game are you playing? And I think people are maybe playing too many games at once and end up not getting anywhere with any of them.
Winning any game, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, I said it was the last question, but like just one more. Of all the gamifying and hacks and this, that and the other people do, what is at the moment, I bet it changes if you're anything like me regularly, but at the moment, what is the one thing that just annoys you the most when you see people doing it that you're just like, oh my God, just stop doing that, please?
Yeah. I mean, nothing annoys me because I had to emotionally detach myself from that stuff a long time ago, because otherwise I'd sit on LinkedIn all day and just get wound up. So yeah, I don't agree when people are like, this is wrong and you should be doing this. It's like, they're all experiments. They're all ways of trying to achieve something. And everything that people try, is there's no right or wrong to it. It's just they're trying something and they're trying to figure it out. For me, one thing that's interesting at the minute is like, you engagement pods were a way that people created mammoth growth on LinkedIn for a good few years. And it's my understanding of it is that's not working anymore.
Yeah.
And with some of the experiments that you can run, there's a trade-off. You're trading off one thing to gain another. And engagement pods for me are a trade-off. You're trading off potentially negatively impacting your reputation because people see what you're doing and think it's quite spammy, and they think that they can see that you're trying to game the system and or this kind of thing, and that loses you reputation points, but you're trading off because you're gaining a following. And you're like, the trade-off is, in some instances, depending on the person, it's worth it. But if the growth isn't happening via engagement pods anymore, then the trade-off for me isn't worth it. And I think I've observed a couple of situations of people that are in engagement pods to try to grow their followings, and the trade-off is not worth it, in my opinion, at the moment in time. Their reputation is not worth kind of losing points on in the trade-off. It's worth it if your platform is growing significantly. If somebody's gaining 10, 15, 20,000 followers a month off doing it, then maybe the reputational hit is worth it for a period of time. You go, right, okay, I'm just going to do this for a year or two to get to where I need to be, and then I can pivot what I'm doing. But if that trade-off isn't there, which, again, I only have a small sample size, but it seems like it's not anymore, then yeah, is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak?
Yeah, I agree. And I get, like you said, it depends what you're aiming for, doesn't it, as well? Because the follower growth may be huge, but it may not be the followers that are ultimately going to benefit you anyway. But like you said, it's all a trade-off, isn't it? So, absolutely fantastic conversation. I have loads more questions, but we've run out of time, haven't we? So it'll have to be another time. I'll obviously share links to your website and your social and your LinkedIn and everything in the show notes. Everybody listening, just head to the show notes if you want to go and connect with Ash and follow his content and have a look at great influence and great leaders. Is there anything else, any next step or anything I'm missing there, Ash?
No, that's where I am. LinkedIn, Ash Jones, greatinfluence.com. Easy as that.
Well, thank you so much. We won't leave it so long next time. It won't be 4 years. I love to have you back on again. But thanks for coming back on. It's been such a great conversation. So thank you.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back on.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that discussion, and thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoy the Content 10X podcast, then why not hit that subscribe button on your podcast listening app of choice so that you can get updated when new episodes are released. And I'd really, really appreciate it if you could leave a review as well. That really makes a difference for the podcast. Also, please do get a copy of my book, Content 10X, More Content, Less Time, Maximum Results. It is the ultimate guide to repurposing every type of content. And it's available on Amazon, in Kindle and paperback, and also in audiobook as well. And you can head to content10x.com/book to find all the other places that you can get a copy of my book. And if you would like us to do your content repurposing for you, then we offer a fully end-to-end, done-for-you content repurposing service. This is for podcasters and video content creators. We have our Podcast 10x, Video 10x, and also our specific LinkedIn 10x service, helping you to become the leading authority in your industry on LinkedIn. You can find out so much more about our services on our website. And also, please do give me a follow on the social media platforms. I share lots and lots of tips and advice on social media about content repurposing. I'm at Content 10X on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And if you try content10x.com/LinkedIn, you'll find my LinkedIn profile over there as well. All that's left to say is thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and I'll catch you in the next one.